Welcome back. Mike Hoss, Jeff Nowak with you until 8 o'clock tonight, and just thrilled beyond belief to talk to our next guest, Jim Henderson. We worked together at WWL Television, the voice of the Saints, for many, many years before retiring in 2017, but then Zach Strief would take over. And how you doing, my friend? I mean, are you sitting, you're joining us from a lake in Mississippi, that's all I'll say, and I'm assuming you're looking out over the vast landscape, just loving it.
You know, I really am. This is usually where I am about this time of the night, the evening, and sitting on the back porch, looking at the sun about to set, and enjoying very much the peace and quiet.
Barkley's with you?
Actually, Barkley is at a place called Animal House, where we board him in Picayune. Just outside of Picayune, because we go on vacation beginning tomorrow afternoon, and he's not accompanying us up to upstate New York this year. It was just too difficult for him last year, too long a drive. So he gets the spa treatment for a couple of weeks while we go to upstate New York.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that. In fact, when I called you to set this up, that you were going to be going on vacation, I wasn't sure how that would be. Certainly the scare of a lifetime happened back, I guess, early February when you had some health issues, ended up with quadruple bypass and heart valve surgery, but you've been resumed normal activity. And I guess my question is, just tell people how you're feeling, how things are going, and how the recovery's been.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for asking. I feel great. It was February 19th when I got the scare of a lifetime. I had no idea that I was in that sort of shape that I'd require quadruple bypass surgery, but we discovered that, and fortunately we did in time. I knew I had a valve problem with my aortic valve, so they replaced the aortic valve and performed a quadruple bypass surgery at the same time at St. Tammany Hospital, and I got great care. I had a great cardiologist, Dr. Hebert, who performed the operation, and I was in tremendous hands, and the people there just treated me great. So I'm in the midst of rehab now. I go three times a week, 36 sessions in all, and I'm one-third of the way there.
But you are back fishing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's nothing. All that is good. And the trip to New York, which is an annual event for the family, and I know you, that's an important part of your family, which has gotten so much larger, getting everybody together in upstate New York.
Yeah, we have a family camp. It's been in my wife's family for generations, actually. It's on the edge of the Adirondacks, up around Watertown, New York. And we've been going up there, well, I've been going up there since I've known her, so that's nearly 60 years. And the whole family gets there over the 4th of July. We have a great time. I sympathize with you because this is the dregs of June, and I remember it well. You know, the Saints,
especially when LSU's not in the College World Series.
Training camp.
Yeah. No Tigers in the College World Series. You're like, ooh, June's going to be rough,
right,
baby.
Yeah, oh yeah. I remember it well. This is usually about the time of the year that I said, you know, I think we'll go on vacation. I'll have Mike Haas do the sports for a couple of weeks.
Gladly. And one other thing that you told me earlier that I thought was challenging is that you knew you had the issue, but it was also during Mardi Gras. And so you had to wait, right? There was like a challenge of you knew you kind of had this issue, but you had to wait. That must have been anxious.
Yeah. That was kind of scary. They had diagnosed it, and Dr. Hebert wanted his team to perform the surgery, he and all the other people that assist him in the course of a two-hour plus surgery like this. And so while they knew we had this problem and wanted to address it as quickly as possible, he couldn't get his team together because they were scattered around the country or had their own family commitments over Mardi Gras. So, yes, for 2 weeks I wondered about why are we delaying this? Do we have to delay it? Am I still going to be alive in 2 weeks? And it all worked out famously.
I'm reading up. One of our texts wrote in and said, I miss Jim and Archie's on-air banter. Jim could brutally be hilarious when picking on Archie. Once he described a play where the opposing quarterback threw the ball sidearm poorly, and Archie said, what's wrong with that? I made a career out of it.
Yeah, when Archie was a Saints quarterback, that was one of his critics' big knocks against him. He'd had injuries, and so he threw the ball with a somewhat sidearm motion, not totally sidearm, but not directly overhand either. So this is one of the critics that jumped on him about that. And, I know you're going to have Archie on, I guess, at 6 o'clock for the Manning Passing Academy. And, you know, I'm sure you'll probably touch on this, too, although he'll be reluctant to talk about it. He's had a lot of health problems himself. You know, we all get old and things happen. And Archie's had a lot of things to overcome. He's done so with the same sort of courage he always had as a player.
Well, and you see, and I've seen, because when I did sidelines for 3 years for the Saints, they would have, you know, returning former Saints players. And the guys who played in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, not 50s for the Saints, but 60s, 70s, and 80s, you could see the toll on their body and what they went through, and nothing would keep them off the field. But there, a lot of them are paying the price now. Not necessarily Archie, I'm just saying that generation and their bodies took such a beating.
Well, we all think we'll be young forever, and you're exactly right. Old age or approaching old age is when we pay for what we charged in our youth. And the guys that played during that era, as you mentioned, I mean, they were willing to sacrifice their bodies for their sport. And I know a lot of them. I mean, I worked with a number of them. I mean, working with Hokie and working with Stan Brock and with Deuce, all people that I treasure the time that I spent with them in the broadcast booth. I see Rich Maudie occasionally over here on the North Shore. Rich is a fisherman, and he's got, I'm sure he'd tell you this too, somewhat like Archie, he's got neuropathy in his feet and can't feel his feet. So he has to shuffle around and like an old man, and it all comes from the punishment that these guys absorbed during their careers.
You know, Jim, I do wonder, and you know, Haas will be able to answer this question in a few years. When you call games for so long and then you have to go watch a game, do you sit there on the couch and do the play-by-play? Or do you have to kind of like force yourself to be like, nah, this guy gets to talk. I have to sit here and listen.
Well, you know, I don't actually call play-by-play, but I really do enjoy watching the national broadcast just as a critic of the telecast and somewhat of the announcers. But I really enjoy watching the national telecast and there's so many good announcers out there now, but what makes them what they are, how well they've prepared, how quick they are to recognize things, and to see the broadcast itself. And I was just thinking about the criticism that these guys endure, and I think one of the people that got the shaft was Drew Brees. I mean, I thought Drew would have a terrific career, and he still may. But he was cast aside after 1 year, primarily because of a playoff game where I guess he failed to recognize something. And nobody who has ever not done this job realizes how much is going on in the broadcast booth, especially when it's your first year and maybe it's your first group of people that you're working with. I mean, I've likened it kind of like, and Mike, I'm sure, would tell you the same thing. You're like an air traffic controller. There's so many things being thrown at you, and you have to make the decision, all right, I got to bring this in now. No, this can wait. No, this is totally extraneous. I'm not putting that in. And you've got broadcast positions around the NFL, and even while you're a network announcer, you're going to be in the best positions. But Mike will tell you, when you're doing the Saints games, at least to when I was doing them, and I assume it's still the same way, no one is higher in the Superdome than you are. So just recognizing the number and the players is a challenge in and of itself. And each week, when you're on the road, it's a different challenge.
No, you're right. And so that is the fortunate situation, because you had Stan Brock and Archie and Hokie and Deuce. I often ask him, I go, are we watching the same game? He is so brilliant. But I, because of the situation, I watch games with binoculars. So I'm about the ball, right? So, but I'm tunnel vision. And Deuce is, right. He sees things before the referees, the team. And so, but it is different. But you're trying to, you miss things, a flag or something, because you're looking through binoculars, even though they're wide lens. It's not a different game, but we're watching different angles. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I used binoculars throughout my career, even when I had a better vantage point. And there are some places like New England where you've got a great vantage point.
Yeah, it's the best.
Or Tampa Bay, you've got a really good one. Then you've got other places like Washington where you can't see half the field. But I use binoculars as well, and you're right. You kind of need to just be, first of all, you got to get these players right. You got to get the nitty-gritty down. Who's carrying the ball? Where did it go? Who made the tackle? That sort of thing, which while you've got a spotter, most of the time I really inflicted that on myself, having studied the rosters and being able to know these players immediately, because sometimes, well, especially if you're on the road, sometimes you got a terrible spotter. Archie would tell you the same thing. Some of the people that we had that you knew from the very beginning, this is not going to be good. This person doesn't know what they're doing, didn't bring a roster to the broadcast position, didn't bring a pen and pencil, didn't bring any sort of thing to write on. And this person, especially if they give you something wrong early in the game, you never trust them for the rest of the game, so you have to rely on yourself.
I'm curious about this, and I'm sure you've answered it a bunch of times, but I don't know if I've asked you. When you retired in 17, which means the 18 season, which was Zach's first, mm-hmm. have you ever thought about how you would have called the no call? Right?
Yeah. That would have been a challenge. I remember seeing it from the stands, and it was just unbelievable. I thought, you know, I guess Zach will not get back into the broadcast business, at least not right away. I guess he's still in Denver with Sean, but I was really impressed with Zach's ability early on in his career, the first year he was given that job, about how thorough he was and how much he was up on technology, which was something that I lagged far behind. But I know you're really involved in that, too. I think Zach could be, if he wants to be, a really excellent broadcaster.
Well, you're right. And I was going to get to that. And, like, the world, it's different, right? When you and I were in the sports department, right? Mm-hmm. So there was no internet. Now, people, right. let that sink in a little bit, you know, at home. No internet. So on Tuesday, you would wait for the AP machine in our office to spit out, hey, here's the NFL stats for the week, right? Tuesday afternoon. And if for some reason we were out of paper in the sports office, I mean, that's what you had to wait for. And then
that's right. And usually, unless something really big happened with your teams, that was about all the information you got before game time. And now with the internet, you're on that during the game. I know. I've seen Deuce. You know, he's on Twitter during the game, checking on things. Zach was. I know you're way up on that as well. I mean, when I first started out, you really didn't get much information after Tuesday. Although, if you worked the year that I worked for the network, you'd have broadcast associates who were just trying to get into the business, working a runner in the network. And they would put information underneath your door of your hotel room all night long because they were watching whatever happened on the internet or whatever information they were giving. I don't know how they thought you'd stay up all night reading this stuff, but you know, they're trying to get ahead in their job and do their job. And so that's kind of the way it is now. I mean, you never stop getting information, even in the course of the game, where that certainly didn't used to be the case.
I kind of feel like that almost sounds liberating in the sense of, like, if you're wrong now, you're wrong real fast. If you're wrong in, like, the 80s, you know, you're still right because no one knows. So you can't double-check that. You can't fact-check.
You didn't instantly get a tweet, hey, idiot. Yeah. That's the fourth time he's done that, not the third.
And I always thought it was comforting to be on radio rather than TV. I always felt when I was doing TV, if I made a mistake, people saw it, and they could see it forever. The good thing about being on radio is if you made a mistake, you say, well, that's out in the ozone. Unless people caught that, they'll never know I made that mistake, and you just have to live with it yourself.
But it was impressive. It was an impressive research because you had to do it yourself. I mean, the AP was Archie would come on the set on Thursdays. You'd pick his brain. You'd have different coaches on the staff that you would talk to. But it was a different time in preparation for a game back then. I know because I have a box of what I would call all of your flip cards, right, from that you'd given to Zach. And it's like you see the amount of work that went into it, knowing that information was not readily available, Google, right? It took a lot of time.
Yeah, it did. And you know how, what it's like, Mike. You've got to stay on schedule, and it always bothered me if for some reason it, you want to do certain things on certain days. On Monday, you had your recap and the commentary and everything. Tuesday was truly your only real day off. And then Wednesday, the information started pouring in. Thursday, you'd be working on your charts. Pardon me. Friday as well, Saturday. And your focus starts honing in on the game. And I know when we had a home game, my family lost me around Saturday afternoon. By that time, my mind was at the game the next morning. And it places a tremendous burden on your family because oftentimes in the course of 6 months during the football season, the job has to come first. There's just no two ways about it, and your family sacrifices to a degree in the meantime, but it's all worth it, and I think that they know that too.
You know, Jim, with Drew, he was announced into the Team Hall of Fame, and you kind of had this chance to have this kind of contemplative time in terms of looking back on Drew's career in a way that we didn't really get to because he retired after 2020 and everything had kind of stopped and there were no fans in the stadium. But, you know, as someone who watched a majority of his career firsthand, obviously you weren't there for the final few years. I'm just curious. It can be the Super Bowl, but I think it'd be unfair if you picked the Super Bowl. What are there any memories of his career for you specifically that stand out when you look back on what that was in New Orleans and what it meant for New Orleans? Does anything in particular stand out in your mind?
I would say it's just the entire breadth of it. Seeing the way he dealt with his teammates, seeing the way he dealt with the fans, dealt with the media for all the time that he was here, the classy way that he did so. How readily accessible he was. I don't think I ever saw, of course, he didn't get too many tough questions because he did such a great job, but I didn't ever see him get in the face of a reporter, take umbrage about anything. He just had that whole, he had the whole thing. He knew exactly what he was there for and how important he was to every aspect of the organization. So I can't say enough good things about Drew Brees. And I think everybody would agree.
Yeah. I mean, he did it right, right? So he comes here in 06. You know, we're on our knees. He moves here. Moves and says, "Look, I'm moving, uptown, and we're going to plant roots," and kind of made a statement. And to me, and I've always, how do you ever not look at the 09 Super Bowl team? But if you were here in 06, they had 30 some thousand season tickets available for the 06 season, right? That was my first year as a fan, so to speak, and that 06 season was unbelievable. It was magical. I mean, they ended up losing in the NFC Championship game in Chicago, and I think if they'd have won, I'm afraid they might have beaten Peyton Manning and the Colts in that Super Bowl. That was, to me, that 06 season, and Drew, what he did, sending that message to the world, we're back, that 06 season to me was just special.
Yeah, that was magical, wasn't it, in so many ways, and the opportunity to draft Reggie Bush and all the things that seemed to fall in the Saints' lap that year, and rightly so. It was like it was destiny, and then, 3 years later, you truly were a part of destiny when you realized early in that season when the Saints were unbeaten that this is going to be a special year, and if we're ever going to win it, this might be the time, and it was. I wish you would get the opportunity, and I've said this about other local broadcasters around the NFC South, I wish they would all get the opportunity, as I did, to call a Super Bowl, because you work so hard and it's so much a part of your life, and it's such a special time that maybe that'll be in your future sometime soon. I certainly hope so.
So do I, and so do every Houdat out there. So let you go. Get ready for your trip. I did get one text that says, if you're in New York and you're close to Beaver Kill, New York, go see Chef Thomas Finch. He's got a bed and breakfast up there. He's from South Louisiana. I don't know anything about Thomas Finch. I'm sure it's a great bed and breakfast. But if there's a place called Beaver Kill, New York, you have to go. Just for me.
Beaver Kill. I'll remember that.
Beaver Kill, New York. My friend, okay. It is an honor to have worked with you and to talk with you, and I'm so glad you're doing well. And I know I speak for the Houdat Nation. Continued success and continued progress.
Well, thank you, Mike. You're a special guy, and perhaps the best draft choice we ever had at Channel 4.
Thank you, my friend. Safe travels.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Jim.
Take a break. The great Jim Henderson, voice of the Saints, WWL. everything. You want whatever you want to do. 1978 is when he started at WWL.